Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Dave Pedden from Lubrication Engineers Canada. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, James.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on here. For those that are familiar with you, you are a product specialist with Lubrication Engineers Canada, specializing, or I guess not specializing, but your focus area is more Western Canada, correct?
That is correct, James.
Perfect.
I handle the Western region for Lubrication Engineers from an area of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, to the Pacific Ocean.
That is a huge area to take. That's thousands of kilometers wide.
Yes, sir. And four time zones.
Yeah, so you're definitely a busy man. So it's good to finally get you on here. I know we've tried a few times, and it's good to get you on. And let's talk about lubrication today.
Excellent.
So how long have you been involved with not just Lubrication Engineers, but lubrication in general?
This is my second stint with Lubrication. I worked for a major oil company prior to this. So I was with them for about 6 years, and now this is going on for my second year with Lubrication Engineers.
Oh, very good. And what has your roles been with those lubrication companies? Sales, product specialist?
In my prior role, I was a lube area manager, lube specialist, sales. If you will, I was jack of all trades and master of none. The job was set out to do the C&I division, which expanded from there into government contracts and then into fleets, both construction, transportation fleets, that sort of thing. And with Lubrication Engineers, it is much the same thing, except that we specialize more in the non-commodity-driven oil products.
Okay. And what do you mean by non-commodity for those that are unfamiliar with that term?
Commodity products are similar to what you can get in any retail store. Your 530, your 1030, your 020, 520, and 1540 and other fleet oils. They are driven by very large oil companies that make good products that are price point and price sensitive. So they're more a commoditized product. Lubrication Engineers does not subscribe to the commoditization of a product. We build excellent products that withstand the test of time and durability, and hence we are not in the commodity market.
So, not being a commodity product, why is that important in a lubrication or a maintenance reliability program, and why is lubrication in general so important in that type of a program?
Lubrication is fundamentally the blood of any industrial, transportation, or other fleet-issued programs. Without lubrication, everything comes to a grinding halt. It's so important to have proper lubrication, and lubrication that will stand the tests and rigor of modern machinery. Although lubrication has been around for the eons, I mean, water was acted as a lubricant, but now we have such advanced, high-powered machinery that we do not have room for a lesser lubricant, if you will. Our lubricants in general are of high performance and are becoming much higher in performance. The lubricants of the 60s and 70s and 80s cannot stand up to the current demands of the 2010 and beyond product lines. Lubricants have become essential for your plant's reliability and its ability to function 24/7 if required.
Okay. And I'm assuming that if you don't get lubrication right, it's going to be very hard to keep that equipment operating at peak performance, peak operation, and efficiency, correct?
Correct. An improper lubricant can cause all sorts of issues. For one, you can have a lubricant that de-emulsifies water. And if it de-emulsifies water quickly, the water doesn't get into your, such as a hydraulic system. Water and hydraulics is, you know, it's fatal to the system. Water does not compress. So it causes all sorts of issues with hydraulic systems, water in engine oils, in gearboxes and everything else. Again, it's fatal to the system. Dirt and its other components and contaminants are also fatal to an oil system. So you have to have a very robust oil to withstand the rigors of modern machinery, modern equipment, modern engines.
Yeah, absolutely. And lubrication is vitally important. Now with that, do you know how many failures you can contribute to improper lubrication?
Well, there was a study by the STLE back in the mid-80s, and that was undertaken by the National Research Council. And back then, generally, it was assumed that the annual cost of poor lubrication or excessive friction and wear was about $5 billion. Now, if we extrapolate that to a 2017 figure, would it be three times that value? Probably close to that. So, say $15 billion. In the United States, it was $194 billion. Now, we've improved. But even if you take, you know, a reduction because we've become much more efficient in some of the lubrication, $10 billion is an excessive amount of money lost to poor lubrication or improper lubrication of systems. We have to do better. Lubrications are demanded to do better now more so than ever. Plants are running longer and harder and leaner than they ever have. And you have to have a high-performance lubricant in there to make sure it works.
Yeah, absolutely. The right specification lubricant, the right intervals to inspect the condition of the lubricant or change the lubricant, they're all vitally important. Now, with those dollar amounts you're mentioning there, that's a tremendous amount. With all those opportunities, I'll say, why isn't that lubrication-related issues are not being addressed in many organizations then?
Because lubricants have been treated as a commodity. We can always change the lubricant. We can always, you know, change the oil, if you will, whenever we want it. However, the maintenance personnel within plants have not increased in numbers. Actually, they've shrunk in numbers. So we're expected to do more with less. And that's been the mainstay of American industry for the last little while. So with lubrications, you have to have the proper lubricant. Improper lubrication will lead you to failure. And an example would be to have an EP additive in a worm gear. Worm gear is having bronze and EP loving yellow metals. It may, depending on temperature, activate against your yellow metals and cause excessive wear. You have to have the complete lubrication practice, as in change it from just a commodity to an asset. Make the lubricant an asset to your facility. If your plant treats it as an asset and you work it as an asset with proper world-class specifications, doing the filtration and doing the breathers and doing the sampling, then you can run your machinery longer, stay within grade longer, and cost you actually less. So your cost of ownership is actually decreasing.
That makes perfect sense, is having that holistic approach to a lubrication program. That's vital from the moment we spec it, order it, receive it, store it, dispense it, and apply it. It's vitally important to control that process in that entire spectrum.
Absolutely. You need to control all aspects of your lubrication, from contaminant control to application to actually receiving and checking your ISO counts. And this is one of the things that you're changing the mentality of some plant managers from a commodity to an asset. You treat your oil as an asset to the system.
Absolutely. Now, what are some of the main issues you see in the lubrication programs out there?
Well, the biggest problem we see is that the mindset hasn't changed. Yes, the performance level of lubricants has increased. It has much greater control. You have much tighter lubricant packages. The additives are much more superior than what they do. But one of the things you constantly see is when you receive the oil, you leave the drum outside, and weather has an effect on it. And, of course, rain will sit on top of the drum, and drums breathe. So it takes in water, ingest air, ingest dirt. You take it inside, and you typically pump it out, leaving the barrel upright, and you pump it out to a container that who knows where it's been or what oil was in there before. And you go to apply it to a piece of machinery that doesn't like a certain additive, and it causes further issue. So you have dirt, the water, you have all the nasties that are in there, and we haven't thought about how are we going to protect that gear that's going to run and maintains our plant operation. Are we failing to do the necessary things to keep that piece of equipment running efficiently? Quite commonly, the biggest mistake I see is when people go out there with dirty oil cans and apply oil into a gearbox, and they have no idea what has been in that pail before or that container before. So what you have to do is think of it as an asset from beginning to end, cleanliness. Filter out the water. Filter out the dirty air that's coming into the gearbox. Even filter gearboxes using a filtration cart. These are things that make your plant succeed. It keeps the wear and tear on those gearboxes, transmissions, or whatever the case may be, down to a minimum.
The lubricant itself has the opportunity to become contaminated at all different aspects of when it's received on site, stored, dispensed, and actually when it's in the asset as well.
Correct.
So if we have all these opportunities for contaminations, how should we be storing and handling these lubricants then?
Once again, you have to go to the idea that you're changing from a commodity where you just took it in a drum, pumped it into a container, and took it out to the plant machinery and fed the machinery, oil into the machinery. Where we should be looking at is how do we change it to an asset? How do we make your oil consumption go down and your reliability to go up? Therefore, your cost of ownership goes down. So it's a series of issues that need to be addressed. Now, the biggest issue is treating your oil with the idea that I'm not going to let the dirt and water and all the contaminants get in. So you're going to store it indoors, preferably in a warm environment. That way, because drums air breathe, it doesn't go cold, hot, and draw in some of the contaminants or water from the outside. Second thing is, in most world-class plants, they are filtering the oil to get the ISO counts down. Your particle counts are critical to be maintained at a certain level because the tolerances in the servos and the pumps and all the rest of the things have become tighter and tighter. So we need to keep those contaminants out. We put air breathers on that actually filter out the water from both the gearbox, and when it draws in air, filters the water out of that, along with contaminants. So we do those things. The delivery of the oil from when it's properly received and stored and implemented, the delivery from the point of your oil room to the final machinery should be that clean, well-tagged, well-organized, labeled system so that you're not making a mistake of cross-contaminating oils. You're delivering a clean oil with that pitcher container delivered only by one particular oil, such as a transmission oil. If you have a red container designed or designated for transmission oil, it should only be used for transmission oil and delivered to the machineries that are identified, that is tagged and identified that way as to taking transmission oil. That way there's no cross-contamination, you're controlling your dispensing of your oils, and eliminating some of the aspects that are the number one or leading causes of failure. Poor oil, contamination, wrong oil.
Poor oil, wrong oil, contamination, mixing oils, those are all various aspects that degrade the equipment performance and equipment life over time. This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Now, I get this assumption all the time, and I just want to make sure I am correct in my assumption. Does oil actually arrive clean in the drum, or does it need to be filtered before we put it into equipment?
truth of the matter is that you should filter, depending on your application, all oils should be filtered upon receipt. Now, your oil is going to be reasonably clean, but it may not be the ISO cleanliness that you require for certain machinery. Servo valves and all the rest of it have such tight tolerances nowadays that you cannot, it's inconceivable that you can use a higher particle count, a higher value than what the tightest tolerance on the servo will be. And servos, you know, you're looking at 13, 12, 11 in some of them. They're extremely tight, and new oil is very borderline on those. You can have, it depends on how long it's been outside, how long it's been stored, when it was manufactured, and all those things come into play. You need to know what has happened to your oil from cradle to death.
Okay. Makes sense. So we should filter it depending upon the application that we're using it, but generally we should be filtering it before we're using it because it doesn't come into the level of cleanliness that we may require.
Correct.
All right. So with that, we have a filter cart. Should we have a different filter cart for each different oil that we're going to be using then so we don't do any cross-contamination or mixing?
Absolutely. And depending on what you're trying to filter out, depends on the type of filter you're going to be using. Some, if you're using a filter cart and you don't know what's happened in the past, you may want to use a series of filters that will take out water as well as dirt and contaminants. And you should always use a specific filters and change them out and flush your lines before using it on another oil system. Otherwise, you're just cross-contaminating.
Now, if we were to mix lubricants and cross-contaminate them, what impact does that have on the life and effectiveness of the lubricant?
It depends on the type of lubricant that is coming into play. If you're using a transmission oil is extremely heavily additized. It's one of the most additized oils there is out there. If you are using an R&O oil and you start having this cross-contamination by not filtering out or changing out filters and flushing your system, then the transmission oil is going to end up in R&O, and R&O is one of the least additized oils out there, probably less than 5%. So you're going to add additives that don't belong there, and it can cause failures in your turbine. It can cause varnishing. It can cause gumming. It can cause all sorts of issues because turbines are extremely fine, high-speed pieces of equipment that, you know, turbine oil is very light, very additized, or sorry, under-additized as compared to transmission. And by adding some of the additives in transmission, you may cause an issue with your turbine, and they're not cheap pieces of equipment to replace.
No, they definitely are not cheap to repair, maintain, or replace. So making sure that the lubricant isn't cross-contaminated is absolutely vital then, especially in some of these high criticality, high cost applications. Now, I want to switch it a little bit, switch the conversation a little bit. So we've been talking about oils and lubricants, but when people think of lubrication, they also think of greasing and grease guns and that stuff. So I want to pick your brain on those topics a little bit as well. So do people use grease guns correctly in your observations? Are they being used correctly? And if not, what is the most common issue you see with using grease guns?
The most common issue I see with grease guns is over-greasing. One of the other common issues I see is under-greasing. So in order to determine what amount of grease goes into any bearing or system, find out a bit about the system. If there are bearing application charts that will tell you how many grams of grease it will take, but do you know how much the grease gun is putting out? The grease gun can put up to 12,000 PSI, but every pump, how much does that pump put into your bearing or whatever you're trying to grease? And most people don't know that. So the best way to do is to take a cup, a small cup, of a known size and quantity, for example, 1 ounce. 25 milliliters, and fill it. How many pumps is it going to take to fill that grease cup? And you'll find out it's between 25 and 28 for the most part, some more, some less. So it depends on that application. So grease is one of those things that you undergrease it, you got a problem. You overgrease it, you got a problem. That is one of the things that has been on everybody's mind. How do you determine how much grease? There are grease guns now that have an ultrasonic sensor that allows you and determines how many grams of grease are going into that bearing. That is much more precise, and that's something that a lot of plants are starting to take on, because overgreasing is an issue and undergreasing is an issue. They're both trouble.
Yes, absolutely. I remember working with a mechanic, and at one point he said, you grease it until you see the grease coming out of that little seal there. And that's
right.
How he did it. And at that point, there's so much grease in that bearing, it's ineffective.
Well, at that point, the grease is the seal. And at that point, when you get dirt in your grease and it's taken in by a bearing, it's the grinding compound. And I used to hear a maintenance manager said, my number one thing I lock up is the grease gun, because it causes me more issues than anything else. We only give it to people that actually know what they're doing. So is it an art? Absolutely. Is it a science? Certainly.
Yes, and as you mentioned, that ultrasonic approach is gaining a lot more traction to be able to put the right amount of grease into the bearing at the right time. Definitely some good systems out there, and I'll include a link or two in the show notes for those specific systems. That way people can take a look at them if they're interested.
Absolutely. Now, another way to administer proper amounts of grease is with single-point lubricators.
Yes, because that puts out a certain amount of grease over a certain period of time. I think my only caution with those single-point lubricators is making sure that they're sized and calculated correctly. Can't just buy one, set it to whatever value you feel like, and walk away. You have to do the math, like you said, understanding how much grease should we be dispensing, how often, and set them that way, and set them appropriately.
Absolutely. If you're in doubt, consult the bearing manufacturer. Consult a lubrication specialist or a reliability specialist to help you determine what the amount of grease going into a bearing is going to be.
And I think a lot of that comes back to training. All the stuff we talked about, contamination, how to use grease guns, all those things come back to training. Now, do you find that training is typically not a high priority in a lubrication program?
Training is not perceived as an asset to a lot of plants. You're taking time away from my persons or my maintenance people to doing what they're supposed to do. Plants that are becoming more asset related, as in the lubricants become an asset, reliability of the plant, they are taking on the training. And I can tell you a number of places lately that have decided, yes, this is the way to go. We are going to do a monitor-based, asset-involved training program. We are going to understand why we have to use certain greases, why we can't use certain greases, why it is so, why we're going to use an ultrasonic gun or a single-point lubricator or some of the other reliability assets to make it become much better, to become a much more reliable plant. A profitable plant is one that keeps running, not one that shut down.
Absolutely. Prevent those breakdowns, prevent the consequences of those failures, and you'll be more likely to be successful in the long run.
Absolutely. You need to have a reliability program to ensure that you can get the best working life out of your lubricant and out of your equipment. Everything else becomes a falling point.
Now, for those people who recognize that their lubrication program may not be as good as what we're talking about right now, do you have any tips or words of wisdom for how they start that improvement journey or where they should start that improvement journey?
Typically, if you're having issues with your lubricants, it's just not started overnight. It's one of those things that it's happening and happening and happening, and you're seeing more and more failures. So the point you start with is, who's your lubricant supplier? Another point you may start with is your reliability engineers, people that are involved in the reliability aspects of plant maintenance. Number three is training. Let's train those people to gain the knowledge to understand what they're trying to do and how to implement a lubrication program. once you start on the lubrication program, it's a matter of taking a point and let's do a survey of your situation from birth or delivery at your plant to the cradle when you remove the oils or greases or whatever the case may be to its disposal and the insertion of new product. So those are all parts of the reliability program, and how we started is give us a call and we will help you. It's easy as that. Our job is to ensure that you get proper lubrication, the proper type of lubrication, the right amount of lubrication at the right time to ensure that that plant is, as it should be, running effectively and cost-effectively.
That is the role that you play as a lubrication specialist, is helping your customers understand what is the right lubricant, where are the issues coming from, and if necessary, lubrication engineers offers a reliability assessment, which does a full assessment over the entire lubrication program, but also helps develop an implementation plan after that to make sure that the right things are happening at the right time, so it becomes an asset, not a commodity, like you've said in the past, making sure that it is providing value to the business.
Absolutely. We consider it the circle of life of lubricants, from the liability to the asset base, from the delivery of clean and reliable lubricants to the making sure that they're treated with the utmost care, that is filtration, breathers, and all the rest of the asset liabilities. Filtration is a huge one, to the training of the personnel and to the storage of lubricants to make sure that it ensures it stays clean. This is what we do. This is our specialty, and this is how we go about it. And companies that have entertained and have gone into this program have found that their lubricant costs have gone down overall. That is, the cost of their ownership of those lubricants has come down because they can now put it into service for longer periods of time. Instead of changing it on a time interval, we are changing it on a condition base. That is, we do sampling and we determine the viability of continuation of that oil or grease or whatever the case may be at a given point in time. If, for example, we have gearboxes where the person was changing them every 6 months because that's what the manufacturer wanted, and you have to be very cognizant of the fact that you have to do oil sampling. Now he changes it. Well, he's going on to his fourth year and hasn't had to change it because he does the oil sampling and he knows the reliability of that. So those are part of the reliability program and how we do and make those improvements, how we can streamline that. Instead of having, in one case in the plant just recently, where they had 22 different types of lubricants, we have reduced that number through having a look at the machinery requirements and having a look at what they've been told to put into it, and we have reduced it to 10. It's not always the case, but it is, for the most part, the case.
That is a huge change. That's less than 50% of the lubricants they had. They don't need. Dramatic. You can put more room in your lubricant storeroom. There's more cleanliness there. There's less chance of cross-contamination. There's a lot of benefits coming from that.
There is, because not only one, financially, you don't have to store, 22 different types of lubricants. And two, although you have still 10, they are specialized to the machinery you have on hand, and you find that, we'll take grease, for instance, you had four types of grease. We have now narrowed it down to two. Now, we are going to further narrow it down to one, with the exception of certain applications. So, still essentially two, but for the most part, he's going to have one grease for his entire plant.
That's a huge step change in the way things are done. That's
yes.
Great to hear.
It's the way we try to go to market. Our goal is to reduce the consumption of lubricants within your plant by using finally highly refined engineered products that do the test time.
That is a great goal to have for everyone involved. Now, if you had a magic wand, what would be the one thing you would change in the lubrication programs that you see on a regular basis?
Well, that one's a little difficult because there are so many varied types of issues. But the one thing I could hopefully wish for, if you will, is the fact that people will do the training and change their mind about what their lubricants do. Change it from commodity to asset-based and use the asset-based to reduce your overall ownership costs. The whole goal would be to reduce your consumption, but have your people trained. And training is probably the first step of any of these programs. You have to understand what we're trying to do in order for you to do it.
Yeah, you have to create that awareness, that desire, and give them the knowledge so they can actually enact and do these things that we're talking about.
Correct.
Without the training, they can't just go out and do these things.
That's right. If you didn't have training, you'd be lost because machinery has changed so much, and as like we pointed out, you're trying to convert them from a commodity to an asset. You're trying to change them, their mindset from, oh, I'll just fill it up with this. This will work, to, oh, no, we're going to use this particular product and this particular piece because that's what it calls for. And the training provides the reasons why and how come. And the results speak for themselves. We have several plants here where I'm working that have gone to that, and they said, we don't tell them the amount of grease and oil that we used to. Well, then we've done our job. The training has worked.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Now, with that, what is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation and act on? What is the one thing they need to do after listening to this?
Go to our website and understand what we're trying to do for you. We are trying to provide you a world-class lubrication program using training and knowledge to gain the respect from your position so that we can get your plants uptime, get your reliability up, get your purchases of consumable products such as lubricants down to a point where the cost of the true cost of the ownership of the product comes down because you can use it over an extended period of time. That comes with a proviso that you have to do all the testing. You have to do everything right to make it work. And I have major plants that I probably sell them less than half the grease that we sold them 2 years ago. And the reason why, it's starting to work. And that is success. People should go and look at the website and look at the testimonials on the website and, you know, read about them. Read about our successes. Read about lubrication successes. And the other thing is, to get your own knowledge, subscribe to some of the lubrication magazines that tell you about the upscale events, how we are improving, how we're doing different things, how different items have come about. So that's what I would hope that the listeners would take home. Go research some of the things that we're trying to do. Go to the websites, go to the reliability asset people, and see how this can be improved.
Yeah, and if for our listeners, if you're having issues with your lubrication program or you're not sure where to start or want that second opinion, feel free to contact us at info@hpreliability.com and we'll be sure to pass your information on to Dave if you're out in Western Canada or if you're in Ontario or Eastern Canada, the appropriate individuals there and down in the U.S. as well. So don't hesitate. Reach out to info@hpreliability.com and we'll put you in the right direction if you want to start this conversation with the experts. Now, Dave, before we go, where can people find out more about you, lubrication engineers, that sort of thing? I know you mentioned Lubrication Engineers Canada website. We have the equivalent in the U.S. Is there anywhere else they can find out more about you and what you guys are doing?
Well, I mean, you can always call us. You can call me at area code 204-599-8355 anytime, and I'll try to help you out the best I can. We use our technical experts to assist you. You can find out more by, like you said, going to the website, lalubricants.com or lubeng.com, and find out more things about lubricants and the reliability thing issues that are coming up. If you just need a second piece of advice, we were more than happy to help. We are willing to take it step by step with you. We're willing to help you do a lube asset survey, reliability survey if you so wish. We're willing to move it up the scale as much as you want on your time frame.
Yep. And that's why, you know, I'm glad we've partnered together with Lubrication Engineers Canada is to make sure our clients get the best approach, and not just the best approach, but the best products. And that's what I think Lubrication Engineers brings to the table, is that approach, that rigor, and as well as the superior products that you guys produce. So if anyone needs anything, get in touch with myself or Dave, and we'll be sure to help you out with that. Now, Dave, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to have this conversation with us. Once again, I learn something about every topic that I discuss with the experts, and I walked away with some more knowledge around lubrication today, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you, James, for having me, and I hope to be of assistance to you at any time. So give me a call when you need.
All right, thank you, and you have a great day.
And you too, James. Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.